Hello and welcome to Creative Control, the entertainment podcast. I'm your host, Ken, and thank you for joining us on this special Dune Part 2 review. So this was a popular one. Everyone saw it this weekend. It was one of those kind of must-see movies. We haven't had one of those in a while. But also on today's show, we have Alex, Andreas, and Rita, and Sasha. How are you doing, guys?
Good.
Good. Sasha's giving a thumbs up at the moment. He's currently on mute. I think Sasha's just going to be very quiet throughout the podcast until it comes to his point, and then he's just going to go in. I can see that happening.
Yep.
So Sasha's going to go last. We'll save Sasha's the last. But yeah, as I said, we're here to talk about Dune Part 2. Okay, so there has been a lot online on this already. You know, we're a little bit late to the party in that sense because people went on and gave their reaction straight away. I didn't because I wanted to do it, speak with you guys about it first before I went out and just gave my thoughts. But I've got very mixed feelings about this movie, and I've struggled the last couple of days in terms of the amount of positivity I've seen online for it. Not in a sense of I begrudge anybody enjoying this movie, but I feel I haven't seen the same movie as everybody else. So the things that I've seen online in terms of quotes, it's the greatest sequel ever made. It is the greatest sci-fi movie ever made. It is the greatest movie ever made. It's a generational movie. It's our Empire Strikes Back. It's so people when waxing lyrical about it, how every single frame is a masterpiece and every single performance is Oscar worthy. So at the Oscars next year, every single person should be nominated in the relevant categories. I feel like I didn't see the same film. So I'm going to go around the room, get your guys' thoughts and see where we land, really. Alex, I'm going to come to you first. What were your thoughts on Dune Part 2? And let us know if you like Part 1. So what were your thoughts on Part 1 quickly? And then how were you feeling about Part 2?
Yeah, okay. I really like Part 1. I think like most people, obviously, with the trailers and stuff, it wasn't promoted as a Part 1. So it wasn't actually until I was sat in the screening and the title card came up and it said Part 1 that I was like, oh, right, okay. So we're getting a Part 1. So obviously it ended rather abruptly that first part, mm-hmm. but I didn't mind that knowing that obviously, okay, fair enough. I've never read the books, but obviously I know it's a very, you know, dense book in terms of length and, you know, the amount of lore it goes into. So, okay, if it warrants two parts, I'd rather you make two parts and make a full film than trying to cram it all into one. Mm-hmm. So I did enjoy the first one for what it was, but obviously I wasn't expecting it to kind of end so abruptly. Mm-hmm. The second one, yeah, again, I enjoyed it as well. I don't know if I necessarily agree with some of the comments you've read out in terms of like greatest sci-fi of all time and, you know, this, that, and the other. I definitely enjoyed it. I like sort of, you know, the way that Paul's characters developed. Did I miss, you know, certain people being in it more? Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of Florence Pugh. She obviously wasn't in it as much as I expected. But then again, having not read the books, maybe her character actually isn't in it that much and is more in the next book. So maybe that's how it's supposed to be. I don't know. But I felt like, okay, great. You're getting these quality actors for these roles, no matter how sort of big or small they are. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of expecting more in terms of her involvement in the story, along with Christopher Walken as
the Emperor.
Mm-hmm. The Emperor, thank you. Yep. And that kind of thing. So they were just kind of like little sort of like sideline stories and that kind of stuff. In terms of the performances, I thought Timothy Chalamet was awesome.
Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson, awesome. I really enjoyed Javier Bardem's character. I thought he brought a lot of levity and stuff when it came to it. Zendaya was great as well, given that again she wasn't in it very much in the first one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall I enjoyed it. I know that some people not so much, but I'm definitely in sort of like the thumbs up camp, I would say, for
myself. Yeah, no, like you say, if it's in the camps, I'm definitely a thumbs up. I just think I just don't agree with how far some people have gone in terms of five thumbs up they've given it. But I'll come on to some of my thoughts. You're right. Definitely the first movie wasn't advertised as a part one. I think I presumed it to be a full movie because I've only ever known the original Dune as one movie. Mm. Even though I never saw the original movie. So I hadn't seen that movie. I hadn't read the book. So I went into this with zero knowledge, really, about the franchise, other than I knew about spice and sandworms. Yeah. That's pretty much all I knew about it. So, you know, going to the first movie. And, yeah, I enjoyed the first movie. Again, I think it struggled a little bit with pacing and some of the explanations and characters and their motivations. But on a second watch, which I did prior to part two, like the day before, I did enjoy the first one a lot more, knowing more about it, if you know what I mean. So you take things in the information in a different way the second time around. So I definitely did enjoy it more the second time, but I hadn't watched it since the cinema. So it's been quite a while. Yeah. Amrita, let's come to you. Tell us your thoughts. What again, part one and part two. Did you enjoy part one, and how does part two reflect on that?
Yeah, massively enjoyed part one. So I used to work in a bookshop. I have been surrounded by Dune forever, but I've never read it, had never seen the original film, didn't know a whole lot about it other than everyone was like, oh, you know, Dune is like the grandfather of sci-fi and Star Wars, etc., is really just another imagining of Dune.
Yeah.
So I was like, cool, I'm going to watch it. And I loved the first one. Absolutely diehard fan, love it. A lot of that is probably to do with Denis Villeneuve. I think his style overall is something that I'm crazy about. I love.
Yeah, he's an incredible director. You
know, yeah, Blade Runner 2049, another example. I just think he's got like a visionary method of communicating the story that is just stunning, and makes you feel like you're actually there in and amongst the action. Yeah. I was really sad in Dune 1 that a lot of the actors that I love kind of died very quickly. Sorry if no one's seen Dune 1, but a lot of people die, facts.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into spoilers on this podcast. So yeah, we'll probably tip into spoilers. So just that spoiler warning there that we'll try to be a little bit vague on some of the points, but some of them you may feel are spoilers. That warning's out there.
Yeah. But also, if you haven't seen Dune 1 yet, then I don't know why you're watching this review for Dune 2.
Right, exactly. You should probably stop and go watch the movies, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, no, loads of people. I mean, Oscar Isaac is a huge favourite of mine, and it was really a shame that he passed away. That's Paul Atreides' father in it, the head of the House Atreides. So that was quite a shock for me. But I really loved the story and how this little... I mean, he's basically a kid, okay? He's not 20 something, he's probably like 18 or something like that, is being catapulted into a completely different life on a completely different path, and lost everything around him. So I, as soon as I realized, oh, this is actually a part one of however many parts, I was really like crazy excited for this film. And I think I loved it. I'm definitely in the camp of not just like, I love it, I'm a huge fan of this film. For me, it propelled his story into a lot more of a grander scale and purpose. There was a lot more purpose behind not just, oh, he's the son of House Atreides, but actually, like, what does this mean for the spice? What does this mean for the whole of Arrakis? What does this mean for the whole of the Dune universe? And I really loved his character development, the way that he moved from being an unsure person that's kind of reluctant in all of this to, I know my purpose, this is what I'm doing. And I loved everyone else in it. Zendaya, I'm a huge fan of hers anyway, but it was amazing to see more of her in this one, obviously. Yeah. Rebecca Ferguson, I thought was fantastic. She always is. And again, there's a lot more shade to her character that kind of was just scratching the surface in the first one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definite character developments that I enjoyed. I also like that Zendaya wasn't just gung-ho for Paul like everybody else in the Fremen people were, that she was kind of very clearly had her reservations about everything. Yeah. There's not much I didn't like, I'll be honest.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. Austin Butler too. He was wicked. Loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair play. All right, lovely. Andreas, we'll come over to you, buddy. Give us your thoughts again. Dune 1, how did you feel about it? And then how about
Dune 2? So, Dune 1, my first watch was at the cinema. Same cinema I watched Dune 2, Picture House Central in London, on opening night. So, first time I watched Dune 1, I liked it. I found it a bit too long. I didn't love it. But then when I watched it the second time, I really liked it. And then when I watched it the third time, I was like, damn, this film is amazing. So, that's...
really grows on you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my journey with Dune. And I think one of the problems is... when a film's too long in the cinema, I just start getting restless and tired. So I have to take that into account. So very excited about Dune 2. The reviews, like what they were calling it, I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, they said this film changes sci-fi in the same way that Star Wars did.
Yes.
I don't know. I sat in there and it started off amazing. Like that first scene, I saw stuff I never saw before and I love that. And Denny is one of the best directors visually. He's amazing. Nothing looked like a special effect. Everything looked like superb. You cannot.
Very clean.
This film is a 10 out of 10 for all things filmmaking. There's no
correct. Absolutely me, agree with that.
It's all about story and what am I feeling? And so after that great opening, I was fully in, and there was some other thrilling scenes. I mean, the sandworm riding scene was something out of this world, and that other scene where they're sort of attacking the spice harvester. So there was these big scenes. And the themes were brilliant. Like, I haven't read the book. And, you know me, I'm not one of these people that gives two shits about whether they change things from source materials to film. I watch it, you know, is it working?
Is it working in the medium they presented?
But I have read on the things they've changed. And I think, yeah, that's actually clever. I love the cautionary tale of the Messiah. That is beautiful. I mean, we haven't seen that. It's like taking Luke Skywalker and then you're like, oh, I'm with this guy. And then he's like, oh, damn, that's where you're flipping him. Like, I haven't seen anything like that. And I love that. And the themes of, you know, religion and how it's used to control. I loved all that stuff. But then in the last hour, I cannot lie to myself. I was like, fucking end, man. You are killing me now. We're going over the same things over and over again. And these things happen, these major things just happen, like really abrupt. And then they move on and you're like, wait, what? One minute. What? This is a major thing and it just occurs. And I don't know. I don't know if it was tiredness that may have had something to do with it. And I know that I'm going to rewatch this. I've never wanted to rewatch a film more, ever, in all the history of... I've been watching films since flipping early 80s, and I've never wanted to rewatch a film as much as this because of my experience with June 1. And I'm probably... Yeah. I will put money on the fact that I'm going to really enjoy it more the second time in the comfort of my own home, being able to pause it, you know, maybe even watching it in two parts, letting all those elements sink in properly. But if I'm here to judge it on my first watch, and when a film is becoming torturous for that second hour, then, that's how it was. It was, and I went with my wife and my mate. He's read the books, and we kind of all three of us felt the same. It's like just sort of we appreciated it and respected it, and more than the enjoyment factor. And I also felt like, This didn't feel like a complete film. Just like, for me, the first one felt more of a complete film than this one. It got to then, and I was like, oh, you're just getting going now. I want to see where this goes, because this guy is like he's, you know, I want to see where it goes. Is he a messiah? Is he not a messiah? Is he just, you know, has he been manipulated into just using his power? Is he just playing up on it to control and get what he wants, whether that's revenge or, and it just ended at a point where it's like, okay, this is a middle chapter for me. And I know that the third book isn't June, it's June Messiah. So what he's going to take from that, I don't know. And I've heard that book is real action light and more conversational. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested. So I need to rewatch it. I feel bad judging this film or giving it a score right now, because I know it's going to change. But if I had to give a score now, are we doing scores at the end?
We'll do scores at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my thing. I'm really torn. I don't even like to give a judgment to it. The only thing I can say is all the accolades it's got, I just give it that in the technical element. In the other side of things, no chance. Yeah. And I'll tell you one more thing. I went on a packed cinema on opening night, and I may as well have been in an empty cinema by myself. There was no communal experience. Remember when we went and watched Spider-Man No Way Home?
Yeah.
Everyone was like, you felt the energy, the gasp, the people crying and this and that. there was nothing. It was zero. I may as well. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to go, to feel that communal experience, because I don't often feel that. A lot of times I'm in the cinema by myself. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's me. But, yeah.
All right. Cool.
So sorry to interrupt.
So, my assessment or feelings about Dune 2. Firstly, it is beautifully shot. I mean, this is like, you know, there are movies, there are motion pictures, and this is definitely a motion picture. It is sweeping landscapes of Arrakis. It's wonderful. The cast, I mean, the cast is, it's in a phenomenal cast. Florence Pugh, Christopher Walken, Timothy Chalamet, Dave Bautista, you know, everybody in it is a great movie. But it has problems because, you know, it has Florence Pugh, it has Christopher Walken. They're wasted characters. Austin Butler is absolutely wasted in this film. These are amazing actors who basically do nothing during the film. Austin Butler, he gets a little bit of a pass because his intro to his character was amazing. But other than that, he didn't do anything. The finale of the film, the final one-on-one, mano-a-mano fight is anticlimactic. There's no cheering, there's no nothing. It's just two people in a room full of other people scrapping. That's not really epic. So the characters were wasted. The ending is just, it's another cliffhanger. And, you know, you got away with it with Dune Part 1 because anyone who already went into the film knowing this film's been split in half was acceptable of that. You didn't get that with Dune Part 2. This is supposed to be the ending chapter and you left it with another cliffhanger. I mean, also, the whole cliffhanger ending was pointless. Oh, the other houses don't accept you as emperor. Who cares? The other houses don't even have names in this film yet. I mean, if you're a fan of Dune and you've read the books and you know the other houses, but if you're just a novice walking in, all you know is that they exist. You don't know anything special about them. So who cares what they think? What else was there? I mean, that was essentially my big... Oh, Paul's little switch, right? Paul, he goes from being, you know, he basically goes from being Peter Parker to Eddie Brock. He goes from being like, you know, I'm honorable, I'm kind of pure, and, you know, my father and family's legacy. He takes one sip of that blue liquid and he wakes up and he's the great dictator. He's suddenly like, I am the Lord and the leader and you must obey me. And I'm like, that was quick. You know, he had this whole existential crisis about whether he's the Messiah or not. He literally takes a sip of the blue liquid, goes to sleep, wakes up, and he's like, yeah, I'm that guy. Appalling, for lack of a better term. But, you know, these are me nitpicking, because the film, I said, the film looks beautiful, and it was a good film. I did enjoy it, but I don't need any more cliffhangers, and I don't need you to hype up characters and make me want to care about them and then waste them. So, sorry, but that's all I can say. For me, 7.5 out of 10.
No, thanks for that. Yeah, I agree. This, for me, is not an emotive movie in any aspect. It didn't make me feel anything. And that's pretty much how I felt with the first one. It just felt like I was just watching it as opposed to being drawn in and being a part of it. But like you right said, the technical side of this movie is magnificent, you know, from the direction to the cinematography. I know, obviously, he's working with one of the best cinematographers in the world right now. The score was fantastic. The special effects, like you said, it's not like it's a £200 million or dollar movie, but you can see it on screen and you can probably think, well, I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than that because of how well it's done. But at the same time, when you look at a film like Godzilla Minus One and what they achieved with 10 to 12 million, you have to ask yourself sometimes on these big studios, where actually is that money going? So from the special effects point of view, you know, I think a lot of films let us down these days as opposed to what we should expect. And I think something at this level and scope, that is what I would expect. But at the same time, it was seamless. And they didn't let us down in that department.
It was unreal.
And I think that... I know it's the trouble is it's all set pretty much on one planet. I know we had like one scene in this movie on another planet, same with the first, but it's like I can only see so much sand, and it's like as much as pretty as you make the sand, and as orange and yellow it is in different shots, it's just sand, and I don't need all these shots all the time, you know, to establish. I know where we are, I know what it looks like, and I just felt that like the second act, the middle part of that movie, that's where I grew a little bit tired, and I think the third part was better, you know, in terms of the pacing, but I think it did lose me in that sort of like that middle chunk of the movie, because they just seem to be doing the same things. He's like, is he the Messiah? Isn't he the Messiah? Okay, we'll do this. Everyone's questioning it. And I like the fact that they were questioning it. I like the fact that you had two parts of the Fremen who are believers and non-believers, maybe old school and traditional, like old school, traditional, like more modern. But, you know, as much as I really liked Stilgar, Javier Bardem, he just kept saying the same things. It was just like, yes, as it is written. It's like, yeah, okay, I get it now. But that's all his character did in this movie, you know? So he just kept saying, right, do this now. And he did it. And he's like, oh, as it is written. It wasn't really a mentoring thing. It wasn't a coaching or a guiding thing. So that for
not
me
that
didn't
we were
deliver
seeing.
Enough. Yeah.
Not that
yeah.
we were seeing, yeah. Because they did yeah. talk about how he'd coached and mentored him, especially with the sandworm
yeah,
writing.
Exactly, but you're not seeing that part of the journey. And
yeah.
Zendaya was great, but I didn't feel a connection between her and Timothy. I didn't believe there was genuine love there, that she would get upset at the end.
Yeah, that I felt when you were saying you didn't get the feels, that was
yeah.
I massively felt their love story. Yeah. So when at the end he's like, well, I'll take your daughter's hand in marriage for Florence Pugh, I literally looked at Alex and I was like, how could he do that?
Yeah.
Obviously.
The principle, yeah. But I never felt like he was that into it. That's just how I felt. It's just like he kept saying the words, but it wasn't coming across in like the emotion or anything like that. What else? I mean, Florence Pugh, she just delivered lines in this movie. The character, to me, didn't bring anything to this movie other than talking to the Emperor. And I thought the Emperor was completely miscast. Christopher Walken as the Emperor didn't work for me at all. It's just Christopher Walken being Christopher Walken, but a little bit toned down. And I just thought that could have been better casted. So I didn't like the Emperor at all. Yeah. But it didn't go into enough... I just didn't think it went into enough about the Emperor. I still don't know the guy. I don't know his motivations. How is he becoming in control? Why is he in control and nobody else?
I agree
so
on that one.
There wasn't enough there, because we kept flicking back to the Emperor every now and then. But it's like, well, for him to then have this, you know, to him to obviously set it up so Paul's father is killed and the family is disbanded, I didn't get enough of the reasons why, you know, and I didn't.
I don't know if we're going to get that at this point, though. Something in me tells me that's coming in part three, because I feel like him and his daughter's roles are very much just there because we need to be introduced to them at this point.
You've given me 5 hours of movie and I still don't, I'm not the better for why he's doing all this and the way it's structured. And then obviously we have all these other houses and stuff like that. And it's like, we don't know who they are, what they control, why they don't want to accept Paul as taking over. If he's defeated the Ember and he's defeated him in combat, why are they anti it now? So
well,
there's just a lot of the political stuff. Yeah,
they did say in Dune 1 that Oscar Isaac's character, I forget his name, but his dad's character says at one point, none of the houses wanted this or something. Like,
but
we've got this.
Just
so
not
it feels
enough.
Like they were against them the whole way along.
Yeah, potentially, you know, jealous of their house and the way they were coming up, because the whole point is obviously they were coming up and he saw him as a threat. But yeah, I just didn't get enough of that. And it's just like, you could have balanced that a little bit more about, rather than just Paul's journey. I didn't expect Paul's journey. So as much as that was a nice twist, by the time it got to it, like you say, it's the end of the movie and it's like, well, now what am I supposed to do with that? I know we've talked a lot about the movies and how you shouldn't necessarily have to watch another movie to enjoy the movie by itself. And the director said he tried to make this accessible for people who hadn't watched part one. I think that would be very difficult to go into this not having seen part one. If I just watch this as a movie by itself, it doesn't give me enough. It didn't give me enough in terms of story. Austin Butler, I thought, was fantastic. But again, he brought nothing as a villain. You know, he looked cool, but But basically, he killed two people who were drugged up, killed another guy who's kind of old and injured, and then he blowtorched someone who'd already been captured in front of him, killed his own people, and then got beat. There wasn't enough for me to think this is a badass villain. Just because he's killing the women standing around him and killing his own guy, that doesn't make for a good villain. You know, what would have been impressive for me is if you went into that arena and he took on people and showed how badass he was, rather than being protected.
Kenan, although like me and you kind of alone, I think what they were trying to show in the arena is not like he's a massive physical threat. I think what they were trying to show is, as much as he's a psycho, there was a deeper level of like honor, because he let his shield down. He didn't want to, you know, he let his shield down and he wanted to battle that guy one-on-one. So even though we see this really unhinged guy who's like a real psycho, there was an almost element of this honor within him, which gave another layer. I think that there was that bit, which I'm, again, one of the things I missed. I only picked that up because someone was kind of explaining that to me.
That is, to that point, that is exactly the purpose of that fight, because they literally said, Leia Seydoux's character from the Bene Gesserit literally said, we know he's like a psychopath, essentially, but we need to see this in order to witness what his character is really like. Is it someone who has essentially more honor so that we can control him further down the line? And he did display that. So for me, I also assume as well, just being Harkonnen, like, I already know you're fucked. I already know you're a villain just because you're from that species or race. So I kind of don't need to see more other than a few kind of displays of him being a psychopath, because that's all
as a villain of the piece, as a villain of the piece, he didn't progress the story in any way. All he did was launch the attack on the temple area, which is Dave Bautista.
He's just there just to show Batista's character's failures. You got to understand, the whole point of the Harkonnens is that they're controlling the whole area for the Emperor, okay? Failure is not an option for them. And all they've been getting against the Fremen people is nothing but failure after failure under Batista's, under Batista, basically. So, you know what I mean? He's the new manager come in charge of View Cinemas to sort shit out, get root of the problem. He's the next GM, basically. And that's all that does for the story, is to show what real trouble that the Harkonnens as a race are facing against the Fremen. Because the Fremen shouldn't even be a speck of anything.
They just call him rats.
Fundamentally, that he wasn't needed. He was very much needed, because if he wasn't needed, then what's the point in the Emperor coming down? Yeah, sure, he gets the thing saying that Atreides is alive. Sure, but you know what I mean.
When what threat does he pose?
Another manager to sort out the situation. Yeah, I mean, it means, holy shit, what the hell is going on there? Do I have to personally come down? So I disagree with that statement there, Ken. I do apologize. It's just that.
It's a difference of opinion.
I mean, if anything, it ups the ante for why the Harkonnens are actually afraid of the spice production, because they're not delivering their targets. Yeah, I mean,
no, I get that. But overall, I just thought he was a weak villain, because he didn't bring enough to the film. But to be in one movie and all you do is bomb the temple, because you've come in and trying something different, make you a great villain.
He had efficiency, man. He was taking people out left and right with those tactics. I'm just saying.
I did kind of think, why didn't they do this before when they bombed the temple? But I think it's one of those things as well, is like I said to you, there's so many things I missed and I know I've missed that I need to rewatch. Maybe when you rewatch it as well, you might get something else out of it, or you might feel the same. Listen,
yeah, you might do, but a film should be able to project most of its things in a first watch. You shouldn't have to watch a film two or three times to get a feeling for something. So that's just how it made me feel. I shouldn't have to watch something three times for me to change my opinion of a character. So
I agree on that on principle, but I do also like the fact that it's not just what you see is what you get, because if I think about a lot of the films I love, including Christopher Nolan, we all know he's my favorite director. A lot of his films I enjoy watching again and again, because I like the cerebral aspect of me having to unpick something. If you're just going to present everything to me on a silver platter, I'm going to get bored most likely. Yeah, it's great. It's entertaining. It's a popcorn flick, but I'm never going to watch it again.
But yeah. I know what you're saying, Amrita, and with Nolan films and Villeneuve films, I do that. But I'm with Kenan on what would I prefer. I prefer a film that's not dumb, but everything is there on that first watch. You get it all in a sense. But yeah, there are exceptions, and Nolan and I think Denny are those exceptions.
Yeah, they are of that ilk. I do have to
rewatch their movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, like I said, it's not that I didn't enjoy this movie. It's just I think it was lacking in certain areas, and so I wouldn't personally call this movie a masterpiece. It is in a sense of its technical aspects, but I think the story and the characters, if you just watch this movie by itself, it doesn't give you enough of a story, in my opinion. And you know, as much as we say, you know, films should be their own film. You shouldn't have to watch sequels all the time. This very much feels like you have to wait until the next one to really find out what happens, because of the way the character changed and where he left. It kind of is a cautionary tale in a sense of, you know, putting into a messiah and stuff like that and what that does. But everyone's cool with him. No one's upset with him. They're all still following him. So there's no downside to it at the moment. Just because he's a little bit more aggressive and he's a bit more abrupt, there's no the consequence, obviously, is going to war, but they're all happy to do that for him. So we haven't seen those consequences yet. And if the next movie is supposed to be set 5-10 years after this, it's like, well, that's not enough for me. But obviously that's how the story is. And
I think it's tough as well to because I agree, a lot of films, yes, you should be able to enjoy them as a whole package as they are. Mm-hmm. But then I think it's really difficult to achieve that when you're dealing with source material.
It, for me, it's like, why has it taken 2 hours and 50 minutes to go from where he was to where he ended up? It's too much for that.
I have a simple
story.
Answer for that, right? So in my mind, this is again just my opinion, but I feel like if Paul had kind of, if they'd spent less time looking at Paul becoming acclimated with the Fremen people and whatever, getting used to it all, if that was a shorter period of the film, then seeing what happens when he had the drink of life and his sudden, like his actual change, he became much darker, much more serious and somber about what his mission was. Mm-hmm. I don't think we would have appreciated how drastic of a change that was, and how different it was for him to follow his heart and be with Zendaya versus actually, I need to do no matter what's right for the people.
Yeah, I guess I expected
him going against it.
Yeah, I guess I expected the film to pick up a little bit of time up after the first one. That he'd actually been with them some time and integrated somewhat. But I was very surprised they picked up literally where the last one left off. And they're like, oh, okay, they're still traveling after this. So that was surprising. So I didn't expect to have so much of that build up with him be accepted. But again, I just thought, for me, it was too long in that process. Because when the switch happened very quickly. That wasn't gradual. He kept saying, no, 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 no. And the poison was like, okay, now I'm it. You know, so that was very, very quick. The actual quick turn was very quick. So
that's
it didn't for me
because,
matter.
Though, with the quick turn, though, he can now see all possible futures.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that's wrong to do.
So, of course, he's going to come to terms a little bit quicker because his visions are more clearer. Whereas
yeah, and
before,
I didn't have a problem with that. Really, I thought that was good.
Yeah, whereas before, he couldn't make out what that was.
He couldn't decipher the visions,
Yeah, he could only see, like, a very bad thing that would happen if he went south. But the minute he has that, his clarity has become clear. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quick thing. But if you spent any more time on that, it wouldn't have made the film any better.
No, that's my point. I thought the term was good. It made sense. I didn't need so much.
Your
issue
is the thing before that. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't need so much build up when the term was going to be so quick. So that's what I meant in terms of that. Anyway, Sasha, give me your thoughts on Dune Part 2. I'm really interested to know this because I know you're a big fan of the first one.
The negatives first, okay? I agree. Christopher Walken, what the hell? Like, here's the thing, though. I don't hate it, but I do. It's weird. I love Christopher Walken, and I knew he would do... I knew he'd take me out of the movie. But when you're a Saturday Night Live sketch, because of the way you talk... It's like, come on, I would have got Patrick Stewart just for the reference to the old film, and mainly because he's a G, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I would have done. Some of the changes they made from the novel is spot on, because I like the fact that because in the novel, Batista doesn't get taken out by Thanos.
Gurney.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. So when that happened, I was like, yeah, because it's a movie and you kind of want, like, you know, so I was like really excited that happened, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, cool, that was cool. But the other negative is my golden rule. Okay, I can't be saying that, you know, a Marvel movie, you know what I mean? Like, I can't be dissing on Marvel on every podcast, yeah, saying like, yo, Marvel used to be very good at having singular contained stories and still having little Easter eggs that would expand shit, okay? Because I've been criticizing Phase 4 for the exact same thing. So I think it's only fair that I deduct a point, a star, off of Dune because of my golden rule, okay? Yeah. 9 out of 10 fucking movie, okay? 9 out of 10 fucking movie. This is the Star Wars beta, all right? Fuck Star Wars, and I'm the biggest Star Wars fan, all right? But is it better than The Empire Strikes Back? Well, let's not touch the OG trilogy, okay? We're not there yet with me, all right? But if we're talking about current Star Wars, Episode 7 onwards, whatever turd Disney keeps conveyor belting out, yeah, fuck that shit. This movie took a giant dump over that fucking shit, all right? All right? OG Star Wars, I'm still with you. Empire Strikes Back? Nah, mate. Nah, you're not there yet. You know what I mean? I disagree with that comment. I think I need to see Dune 2 like about a billion more times before I come to that decision, because Empire Strikes Back is too high a bar, all right, in my world, all right? But with Dune 2, like, I agree with everything else except for that Empire Strikes Back thing. I will say this, best science fiction. No. The two parts, all right, because I've given it the deduction, and I did the same for the first film, all right, because there was no way it was ever going to be a 10. There's no way, all right? I'm not a hypocrite, all right? But the two parts together, the best science fiction fucking saga I have seen in the past 20 years, all right? Hands down, okay? Hands down. And also, like, I'm sorry, like, I love Star Wars, yeah? But look, George Lucas ripped the shit out of it from this movie. At the end of the movie, all you needed was Yoda to go, "And begun the Clone Wars has."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, come on, man. George, you know you ripped it, okay? Like, you know you ripped it. You know that's where it's from, all right? So with that being said, I got to go a bit deeper into the whole thing that I hate about the movie being like, the parts thing. You see, something that was changed was like, I love Zendaya in the movie. She's amazing in the movie. In fact, she fucking makes that love story happen, because I know you didn't believe it, Ken, but Amrita got it. I got it. I was like, you got to understand, that character is quite big in the novel, but at the same time, at the very end of the movie, she knows what she's getting herself into. She knows he has to get married. You know what I mean? To this, she knows the setup. So that was added. So for them to end it like that created the cliffhanger, because that's the way it was directed. So he's purposely done that because he knows he's doing the third part. I personally wouldn't have done that. I would have made it a bit more final, if that makes sense. So we would have had parts 1 and 2 be a very much contained thing. But hey, he's doing number 3. He said it. They've greenlit it. So I'm for the continuing story kind of thing. Because that was, you know, like, you know, your reservations, I do agree with you 1,000% because of my golden rule. I can't be shitting on Marvel on every fucking podcast and not shit on the thing that I do think is amazing. All right. That's my only big gripe with the movie. Okay. I would have preferred the ending be a bit more final for that tale. You know what I mean? And then the other one be the sequel, you know? Lawrence Pugh's character, fine. She's fine. In fact, she's in it more than the book.
Okay.
To be fair, she's in it more than the book. Same with the David Lynch film. They're like, shit, we've got this actress in. Let's make her the narrator. So they made her the narrator so she could have more more fucking screen time. They didn't do that with this film. So, like, with this film, you know. So, you know, it's interesting.
Can I just say to that, I think the only reason we care is because these are really well-known stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was a lesser-known
what they're capable of.
Actor,
yeah.
Yeah, but if it was like a lesser-known actor, yeah, we wouldn't care how much time the character has.
So
I don't think it's fair to say.
Thing. The other thing is, though, it's like her character plays a very important part in the next installment, a very, very big one. So be interesting, and you will get some of your answers, Ken, in terms of the Emperor. But I do pose something: Star Wars, yeah, 1 to 6. Take those 6 films. Even the TV stuff, what the fuck do we know about Emperor Palpatine? All right, seriously, you don't see him in the in Star Wars, A New Hope. You don't see him in Empire. He just makes an appearance, and then most of the audience that weren't paying attention to dialogue and shit is like, Vader's got a boss? Who the fuck is this wrinkly thing? You know what I mean? And then you meet him in the third one, and although you know why you're there, etc., why is he there? Why is he such a bad guy? And we get the prequels, and fair enough, I'm not going to go into his character there, but you really don't learn anything about why he's doing these things. So I really have a problem with the, you know, with the Emperor in this, considering him and Ming the Merciless were basically the inspiration for Star Wars' Emperor, you know. So, and I'm pretty sure this guy was probably the inspiration for Ming the Merciless. I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, but you know, I don't know how old Flash Gordon is compared to this, but. You know, but those are my gripes. You know, those are my gripes. Just the, you know, the ending, you know, etc. And Christopher Walken. But Christopher Walken doesn't dent the film from me thinking any less of it. Mm-hmm. I really fucking loved this movie. I felt Austin Butler was fantastic. I felt like everyone was on form. Everyone else was on form, man. Like, It delivered the novel to real life for me. All right. And you couldn't do it as one thing.
Okay? Yeah.
It had to be more. I still think there could be a better adaptation out there, though. I think it would work better as a mini series, you know, if you know, give it like 30 years. And when film production gets even more, less and less, we'll probably get that mini series. I mean, and I'm open for it. But right now, it's the niece's time, man, because for me, in terms of sci-fi, this is the best fucking sci-fi saga that's out at the moment, just hands down. They got everything right, everything. And that's just me personally. But then I come from knowing the setups and stuff, you know what I mean? So I was just
I think you do get a different... Yeah, I think you'll get a different experience knowing it before going in. I genuinely believe that, because you're filled with the history and the knowledge of everything. And then as it's kind of spoken and played out, like, yeah, I know that. That makes sense. Okay, that's been referenced.
I will say this with Star Wars. The biggest difference between Star Wars and Dune is Star Wars is sci-fi fantasy. Dune is just hardcore sci-fi. You know what I mean? So I'm comparing it to stuff like Arrival and Blade Runner and, you know, that seriousness that those films kind of take themselves like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fitting for the genre. You know, Star Wars was always like, okay, we're not going to be too hard-edged sci-fi. You know what I mean? And also Star Wars, especially the original trilogy, you know, it could have went that way. And I know a lot of fans want it to go that way. That's why the Andor show was really well-received by a lot of people, because it is more serious Star Wars take kind of thing. But with Star Wars, the original trilogy had heart. You know what I mean? It had heart. Dune, I do agree with you, Ken. Dune kind of does lack that heart compared to what's... Because seriously, I mean, I know you ain't seen the Holy Trilogy, but by the end of Return of Jedi, you crying like a bitch, okay? Like, literally. Over
I
shit
will be. I already know that.
Oh, you already know that? Yeah, okay. But, you know, I think that's probably what Ken was missing. But I knew going
I just didn't
in
that, care enough for the characters or what happened to them.
Yeah. You know? And, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, for me, I saw something that I always wanted to see on screen. And it was just like, it delivered, man.
Good, man.
But Good. I digress. It's not, it may not be for everyone, but you know, but
I think to just to add the point about connecting to the characters, I feel like this is a difficult one because it isn't like overwhelmingly romantic or overwhelmingly heartbreaking or overwhelmingly anything. But what I think is very clear, at least for me, and I think Sasha agrees with me, and I think Alex agrees with me too, is the weight of that responsibility that he's carrying on his shoulders. That is very evident to me. And that is an emotion in itself, like how he's juggling his, what I would class normal human desires and wants and ethics and whatever, to now I've seen all possibilities and I know the responsibility and I only have this one path, whether I like it or not.
I agree with you that that is, you know, such a major thing, but the film didn't convey that to me. Like I didn't, because of the way it was put together in this very cerebral way, I didn't get the weight of that. I'm only getting the weight of that because you're explaining it to me. Now I get there's this thing about why sort of you don't need to force, you know, you don't need to feed your audience, but there's some elements where you do, or in some way, I didn't get any of that. I missed that whole layer. And maybe that's why I say I need to rewatch this.
Yeah.
Because
it is a major thing for me, because if I don't care, then I'm not going to be as invested. So for me, a movie like The Iron Claw, where you have these characters and Zac Efron's character carrying the weight of his family and his father and responsibility, you feel that, you understand that, you get it. And that, to me, is the difference of how you write a character or how you portray it in your writing. Because I'm not saying Timothy Chalamet gave a bad performance. I think he was great.
Everyone was great.
Were great in it. But I just didn't feel that as opposed to the other movie. Obviously, the other one's in more close-knit because it's family, it's brother relationship, father relationship, and stuff like that. So it is a little bit different. But yeah, that weight of responsibility and the care and the feeling of responsibility you have for that just wasn't there for me. So therefore I don't really care what happens to Paul. And because I messaged Sasha afterwards, I was like, am I supposed to not like Paul now? I'm like, am I supposed to think he's a dick? Because he's a dick. And he's like, yeah, he's a major dick. I'm like, oh right, okay. Because it's like, it kind of indicates that he is kind of a dick, but also he's still kind of a hero to everybody in the movie. I'm just like, he's just being a dick at the end. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like he's sending all these people off to die because it's been foreseen. It's like, okay, I'm not rooting for this character, so there's no character in this movie for me to root for. So everyone's just playing a part, and I don't care what happens to anybody. Again,
I think, but this is the weird. This is the weird thing, because the way Dune 1 is, we are big. Well, the whole story is obviously majority told from his perspective, his experience going through this journey. And I think Dune 1 is very much more feely because he's surrounded by his family. He's surrounded by the likes of Momoa's character and Josh Brolin's and whatever. And he's got that kind of sense of youth, of like, you know, that he can do all these things and be, you know, be free as a youngster. I don't know how old he's meant to be, but he's able to kind of have his youth. Whereas this film is very different in the sense that he suddenly doesn't have any of those creature comforts. He's learning to be part of a whole new culture and people. Yes, he's found the love of his life, but he's also learning to kind of navigate what they look like as a dynamic together, because they're both very different people as well, with different cultures and backgrounds.
About the movie, them exploring the Fremen culture.
That was very good.
Well, one thing I will say, though, this film does what a lot of films fail to do. It did a lot of world building, and I loved it for every second of it. Sure, you spend a lot of time on Arrakis, but hey, the film's called Dune for a reason, so go over it. But in terms of the cinematography, fucking hell, that was one of the best. That was some of the best I've ever seen on an IMAX screen, hands down. I mean, you can tell the influence from Lawrence of Arabia, even A New Hope is all there, man. So,
I do think they've tried to, I think Villeneuve said as well, he said he rewrote parts of this because of how Messiah, the second book Messiah was received. A lot of people didn't understand Paul's journey, thought he was just going to be the good guy throughout. So he tried to make it a little bit more obvious in this one in terms of his change to that Messiah and the downfalls and pitfalls that that could bring. Because apparently at the end of the Dune in the book, Zendaya's character, what's her name?
Chani.
She's very much still standing next to Paul. She's on his side.
What they've changed
in the movie is very much she's walked away and she's going off now, and she's in a different direction, which to me definitely makes more sense for the movie, and it makes his turn more obvious in terms of where it's headed. And I think that was the right decision from a director to make. So there's definitely things which he has done which is better, even for me not having read the book. But when he explained that, I'm like, well, good, because if you hadn't have done that, I would have been completely baffled by the third movie if he switched at that point.
I don't know, man. That's one of the things where, like I said, it was like, if them changing that, it doesn't make this a finale.
It makes it more of a story.
But I mean, see, that's why when you said that, I hesitated. I was like, should I answer that? Isn't that a spoiler for the next one? Because he is a bit of a dick in the next one. But, but you know what I mean? I thought it would end with a complete. So when it went on, I was like, okay, I get why people are pissed, you know? But I was
the whole Spider-Man thing, with great power comes great responsibility. Like,
oh yeah,
100%. That is literally what this is. But
So I thought it would have been a bit more clear cut here. And then it's like, but you know what? There are going to be some consequences to what you've just done, as opposed to feeling very much like a cliffhanger, as in, like you said, I was expecting at least another 10, 20 minutes. And I was like, oh, wait, shit.
I'm just thinking of two similar films that came out, which are sort of middle portions around the same time. One is this, and the other one is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
That was the far superior film. I don't care. I felt emotions. I understood everything that was going on. It was still long, and it ended on a cliffhanger, more of a cliffhanger, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a more complete film, and it just, I don't know, it's not good to compare, but I'm just going by.
That's a good comparison in terms of how I felt.
I want to watch this again. Yeah.
But I think there is, again, there's so much more levity in a story like that. There's so much more energy and a story like that, whereas this is an epic saga of like serious consequences.
It's more of a war film that's set in space, you know, and exactly. I get that,
but I think it comes down to storytelling, regardless of the tone, regardless of the source material, regardless of the genre, you know, make me understand and make me feel, and things happened and I didn't fully understand and I didn't fully feel, and I'm giving it, because he's such a great director, I'm rewatching this film as soon as it drops, but I shouldn't have to, and
I probably will, but I shouldn't have to. And if you were to take war movies or like Saving Private Ryan or like 1917 or All Quiet on the Western Front, it's dark, it's horrible, it's gritty, it makes you feel something. So where this is just very, it's pretty but it's not gritty, and it didn't make me feel anything.
That's how I kind of see it.
I don't want a director's cut unless it's shorter. Yeah. Unless it's an hour shorter. By the way, this film has given me a new rule of life. It's actually changed my concept of life. I will never go cinema and watch a film more than 2 hours. I'm never doing it.
I cannot do it anymore.
Alex and I were uncomfortable, but that was a whole different reason. The screen we were in just had no AC. And was packed, and everyone was just
isn't that the Dune experience? It's making you feel like you're there, right?
Maybe that's why you enjoyed it more because you felt it's hot, everything's really difficult.
I feel with these people where I'm in air conditioning room.
Even the front row was filled. Every single seat was filled in this film.
Okay. Yep.
Maybe it was 4DX and we didn't know.
Exactly. Let's give a whip around. So Sasha's given his score, it's a 9 out of 10. Andreas, what's your score?
For the filmmaking, 10 out of 10. No, it's a marvel to feast your eyes on. For my experience on first watch, and it does come down to first watch, I have to be honest, because that last hour was like I was squirming in my seat. I was in agony. 6 out of 10, which I know I've got a real, I've got a feeling that that score's going to go up when I rewatch it. I do have a feeling. But masterpiece, greatest movie, no, I don't get that at all.
It's no Terminator 2. Right, Alex, what's your score?
I think I'd go 8.5 at the moment. I definitely want to rewatch it. Whether it goes up or even down after a second viewing, I'm not sure yet, but I definitely want to watch it again. But I think at the moment I'm feeling about 8.5.
Right, okay. Amrita, is it 9? Is it 10? Is it 9.5? Where are we at?
9. I'm with Sasha. It's a 9. Straight up 9. Dune 1 was a 9 as well. I'm exactly on par with what Sasha's saying. But I also cannot wait to watch it again.
Me too.
I'm going to watch it many, many times.
Yeah. For me, the next watch will be at home because, again, I can't go to cinema and watch it again. No. These people are always seeing it like 5 times in the cinema. I tip my hat to you.
I'm going to go to the cinema and watch it again. I can't wait.
For me, it's an 8 out of 10. It is an 8 out of 10 movie for me. Again, that could increase on the second watch. And because of how my first reaction to the first movie and subsequent watches I felt with that, it can only go up. I wouldn't say it's ever going to go down. But for me, yes, definitely a solid 8. It was just lacking in just a couple of things for me. And I know I've gone on a lot about the negatives, but I guess it was just frustrating because so many people have seen it as the perfect picture. Not you guys, because you guys have pointed out its flaws as well. But everyone says it's absolutely flawless. I'm just like, nah. And that's probably graded me more, which is I probably felt like I need to talk about more about the issues that I had. It's not the perfect movie. But that, again, my opinion. All right. Go on, Sash.
I mean, you know what? I'm going to say something a bit controversial. I could live with...
On Arrakis.
Ending it there. Like ending it there with part two, because I feel he's done the perfect adaptation of that book, in my opinion. I think they ended there and there wasn't a part three, I'm good. Yeah, I mean, they've done it. Now that he's doing a part three, I'm like, don't fuck it up.
I mean, it has the potential to be one of the all-time great trilogies once that final installment is done. I have no question about that, because if you get the complete story arc and you get the story from start to finish, and yes, okay, it might be 10 hours or whatever it is, it could be right up there. There is
six official books.
Yeah. Right. Apparently they go really weird.
They go next level weird. I ain't going to get into it, but even the first book's really weird. I mean, they cut the orgy scene out. There's like a Fremen orgy scene.
That's what was missing.
And then there's just...
You mean I get an extra 30 minutes of sand and I don't get that scene?
Yeah. They missed the orgy scene. There's all kinds
of stuff. Do you want sand in all the crevices?
You know the bit where they get where they're underground with the Fremen and stuff? There's this fish slug thing and stuff. And that's the only thing I'd say. We don't get the weird creatures in this. We get a fucking mouse. I'm like, fuck the mouse, man. Give us the weirdness. Give me more weirdness, man.
Now I want to see the director's cut.
There was a film director, and I really want to see his stuff, and I haven't, because I can't, as you can, you can down, yeah, we'll talk. But anyway, there's this guy that got hired well before David Lynch in the 60s or the 70s. And I forget his name, but when part one was coming out, there was a documentary based on his vision of Dune, because they spent money on it, they built sets, they did artwork and stuff. And this director's supposed to be well out of his mind, and he focused on the weirdness of Dune. Right, and we're talking like some H.G. Geiger stuff. He really embraced it, and he embraced that aspect where it wasn't even Dune anymore. It was like some weird sci-fi stuff. And I actually think, you know what? I want to see that version of Dune, because it was weird as hell.
Weird and wonderful.
I'll send you guys a link in our group chat.
Send it out if you want to check this out.
Because it's nuts.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, probably the next review we're going to probably sit down and do is going to be Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So looking forward to that. Let us know your thoughts in the comments. Rip me to shreds if you feel it's necessary. Praise Sasha and Amrita on their takes. Let us know. But as always, we are here on YouTube, the video version, and on Spotify. You can get our podcast on any major podcast platform, Apple, Google, Spotify, or whatever your choice, we are there. So, but until next time, thank you very much, guys, for being here. Thank you for listening, and peace out.
Peace.